All right, we're back. So, had a chance to get to Citi Field on Monday. First game of the series, the game the Mets won 6-3 against the Pirates. Big hit by Harrison Bader. Had a really fun time. I don't want to give away the listener, but was able to hook up one of the listeners of the show. He has great seats in the Clover section. Again, I like to keep people privacy, respect privacy, but I had a great time. And truth be told, I don't go to a lot of games anymore. I don't think for this show, not that it'd be easy. I could get maybe some press access. I've done that in the past, but you get minor league press access. You don't get put with the big boys, nor should I. They have a job to do. They do it full time. I respect that. And I don't think going to the ballpark is necessarily something that I have to do for this show. But I do like going a couple of times a year. I usually go with my wife. My wife really likes, you know, we like the Hyundai Club. We're able to go on the secondary market. And although those tickets can get expensive, if you go on the secondary market and you play it to the, you know, last minute to the nub, you could probably get a reasonable price for those seats. And you get the food included. I mean, when you really put it all together, it really makes a ton of sense to do it. And the last time I went was late 2022 against the Pirates. That was September. You know, at the Citi Field. And I had every intention of going last year, but as the season, spring turned into early summer and the Mets had the June swoon and we saw where things were going and then there was the fire sale, quite honestly, I took my disposable dollars and I put it into non-baseball related activities. I'm just going to be honest with you on that. And then I looked at, you know, possibly going and I said, well, do I really want to kill a day, a weekend day, to go watch a team that's out of the pennant race? I love the Mets, but I'd rather watch them from home. And also, there's the insight you get from the booth, the ability to scroll Twitter and see what people are saying. There's a lot of benefits to not just the fact that it costs a ton of money. And then, you know, you have the show. If I go on a Sunday, I got to rush back and do this show. There's a lot of benefits of doing what I do and watching it from home. I used to go, you know, late 90s. I think my high was like 20-something games in 1999. I used to get like mini packages. I used to have mini packages of Knicks tickets. I used to go maybe, you know, 8 to 10 Knicks games a year, you know, from 1999 to probably 05 or 06, somewhere around there. And I even had a Mets mini package up until 07. I think I gave it up after 07. You know, and I never really bought any season tickets at Citi Field. I would just, you know, go to a couple of games a year. Whether it be through work contacts or, you know, myself. I mean, I've averaged 1 to 2 games max a year probably since Citi Field opened. I mean, truthfully, it's just been one of those things. A lot of it has to do with managing the radio schedule, business that I have to, you know, get involved in to pay the bills. Unfortunately, as much as I wish this podcast paid the mortgage, it doesn't. Not even close. So I'll be truthful. I don't go to a ton of games. Although I got to tell you, sitting there on Monday in the environment that was so positive and you know, Jackie Robinson Day, a nice ceremony for Jackie Robinson's widow, Rachel Robinson, the atmosphere with the fans and the game itself because it was a good game, you know, made me say, you know, I probably should make my way out to the ballpark a little bit more. And then I go out, and as I announced at the beginning of the show, here I am going to take a flight to Tampa to watch the Mets in that mausoleum down in Tampa. And I say, I don't like going to games, but, you know, that's on the road, and I wanted to get a feel of a road ballpark, and, you know, I'll give you more insight into that trip that weekend when I come on the air, because I'll be back. I should be back, provided that the Southwest Airlines doesn't strand me somewhere. I should be back by noon on Sunday, and I'll watch the last game of the series on TV back here in New York. But as I'm at Citi Field on Monday, and I'm thinking about, I was actually talking with the guy that I went to the game with. I was talking about the toxic fans in the first week of the season, and we were talking about the show that I did and some of the criticisms I levied at the fan base. And he, you know, he said, Mike, I think you're right. And I don't think he was just telling me that because he was my guest and I wanted to hear it. Because I asked him, I said, am I off base? You know, I know a lot of people got mad at me and a lot of people, you know, had a lot of harsh things to say at me. And I've had my battles with this fan base many times over the course of my time on radio. Because I am not a Mets fan that's just going to sit here and say the Mets fans are the best fans in the world. because I can't say that. I think it's a loyal fan base. I think it's an incredibly unique fan base. I think there's so many positive aspects of this fan base. But I think at times it brings out a lot of the worst of what sports can be. Some of, you know, what I talked about earlier. You know, sports at its best is what we saw on Saturday, you know, with all that it has to offer. So, you know, I'm at the ballpark, and as I leave after a Mets victory, I'm reflecting on the day. And I'll break it down into a couple of components. Citi Field is a great ballpark. It's a ballpark that the Wilpons, you know, after years of Shea Stadium, as much as people love Shea Stadium and fondly remember Shea Stadium, it was not an easy place to park. There was nothing but baseball to do there, which maybe that made it more of a home field advantage. The food selection was eh. I mean, look, all these years later, all these food selections, I'm still getting a hot dog and a pretzel, so who am I to speak, right? But the Mets had a chance when it opened up to really make this a jewel of a ballpark. And although I think the Wilpons built the foundation and started the ball rolling, they got so much of it wrong. I still remember going, and I wrote about this at Beyond the Mic, going to that first exhibition game against the Red Sox before the season started in 2009. And I could visualize this ball. I could still see it right now. Fernando Tatis was up and hit a bullet of a fly ball. And I saw over the years he played for the Mets about 3 or 4 years. I saw a number of those balls hit by Tatis, who had great power, go out of Shea Stadium. And this ball hit off the wall, and I'm like, I turned to the guy I was with, I'm like, wow, it's really cold, it's early April. The cold air must have knocked that down. Little did I know, they made the ballpark into Yellowstone Park. And that was a big theme early in the Citi Field years when the Mets didn't hit any home runs and David Wright couldn't hit for power. And I think the only team that came in and maybe mastered Citi Field was the Yankees. And, you know, that was the goal. The Yankees could hit balls out of the stadium. Anybody can. Well, the elite power hitters in the game, most ballparks won't hold them. But even now, when you see a fly ball go out in left and not go over the Great Wall of Flushing and land to those first rows, which we've even seen guys like Pete Alonso hit, that would have been a double in the original Citi Field. So Pete Alonso would be robbed of home runs. So the Wilpons didn't get it right. And Sandy Alderson, who I have a lot of criticisms with because I think he's the very overrated executive, give him credit. He would listen to the complaints. The media would relay a lot of the concerns about the ballpark. And although he's not in marketing or he's not, that part of the business wasn't under his purvey, really, he was more than a general manager. He would get involved in a lot of stuff, from what I understand. And he spearheaded some change, bringing the fences in, making some changes. And I think now, it's not a great hitter's park. I think a lot of it has to do with it's just the weather. The weather where it is, for some reason, always knocks down, especially when it's not humid and it's colder, knocks down balls. But I don't think it's an obscenely difficult ballpark to hit the ball out. I definitely think it's a pitcher's ballpark. I think it helps the Mets keep, even when they don't have great teams, keep games close. And if you look, they're pitching so much better at home this year than on the road. So, you know, maybe that has something to do with it. But even though you saw some great moments and some great fan experiences during the 2015 postseason, where I think that season, I don't remember the toxic fan base ever popping their head out. Even early on, you know, when John Mayberry Jr. was hitting cleanup for the Mets and Soup Campbell was playing third base, I never remember it being like that. And I even remember during the postseason, even though there was stress and agita, I feel like the fans were a really good 10th man on the field. I don't remember too many novenas and being able to cut the tension with a knife like we saw against San Diego in 2022. Really, since 06 and the failures in 06, I think the fans have vacillated between a 10th man and a negative, a net negative, to use a Gary Cohen term. But over the last few years, I've noticed a change. And as I was driving home, I was thinking, well, could it be... So let me not be too verbose here, but let me walk you through it. I think they had under 20,000 all three games against the Pirates. And they're like middle of the pack. What are they, 15th or 16th in attendance? The Yankees are far outpacing them in attendance. And I didn't look at the Yankees' attendance numbers this weekend, but, you know, another great weekend. They've had some better weather than the Mets had on that first homestand. John Sterling retirement ceremony, yada, yada, yada. I think when you start to get a ballpark that is as expensive as Citi Field. And let me walk you through how expensive it can be. I'm not saying you have to sit in the Clover seats like I did. But anywhere you go, if you go on the secondary market, secondary market's not going to pay for your parking. Parking's $40. The secondary market's not going to pay for food. I had a hot dog with fries, a pretzel. Yes, I had two beers. I drank a couple of Coors Lights. So if you don't want to have beer, you don't have to. But when you put it all together, the beers were $15 a pop. The hot dogs, the soda I bought for my guest, the pretzel, you're probably looking at north of $100 in terms of food and beverage, plus the parking. So about $140 maybe altogether, ballpark on that. The tickets were about $88 a pop. So if I paid for those tickets and I, you know, brought a guest and then I paid for the food, you know, I'm looking at almost a $400 night over there. I mean, that's a credit card payment. That's a cable bill. That's doubling your cable bill for one night. I mean, my cable bill is $350. I'm trying to figure out ways to get it down. Can't if you want to watch sports. And streaming's not exactly getting cheap anymore either. So when you start to look at that and you say, you know, you're really seeing, and this is part and parcel, what's going to happen when you have a team that needs to compete in a city like this with a $300+ million payroll, with a venue that needs to attract wealthier clientele, and make no mistake about it, that's what Cohen wants, to attract a wealthier clientele. This is what's going to happen. And I think what you're going to get is you're going to get the hardcore fans that maybe don't fall into that toxic negative mindset. You're going to get a percentage of the crowd that's there for the night out that enjoys being, you know, negative or booing or sitting on their hands or not being as into the game in a positive fashion as they should be. Because that's, I felt when I was there with that small, intimate crowd, and I think I felt it watching it on TV the next couple of days. I said those crowds were better than any crowds, the games against the Pirates and even the Royals. Those crowds were better than any crowds we saw throughout the first week of the season. I don't know why. And I had someone who was in the ballpark multiple days that validated that what I believed and what I communicated on air, even though I wasn't in the stadium, was accurate. And what I wrote at Beyond the Mic was really, are we at a point because you have Che, dumpy place, tacky with the neon signs, great memories for all of us. Believe me, I could still feel the place shaking when Betty Agbayani hit when Edgardo Alfonso hit a game-tying single off of Rob Nen in Game 3 of the NLDS in 2000. I could feel it under my feet. I remember being in the upper deck. I had a friend who was at the 10-run inning when Piazza hit the Grand Slam in 2000 and told me he thought the place was going to collapse. That's the energy. Now, I don't know if you're going to get that in the same manner in a modern ballpark that's built a little bit differently like Citi Field, but I don't know, other than maybe a couple of postseason situations in 2015. I don't know if you've gotten that yet at Citi Field. And that a lot of that has to do with the team. Okay, so let's be part of it. But when I start to say, you know, you had that intimacy, you had that home field advantage, you had this dumpy, tacky ballpark, and now you have this jewel of a ballpark, but the trade-off is because of the opulence and the luxury boxes and the speakeasy club and the food and the cost of everything, from employees that need to be to work there, to ball players' salaries, to the cost of food and what that entails. Is the trade-off a worse atmosphere in a better ballpark? And in turn, a bad home field advantage. Now, fast forward to Saturday, I'm watching the Knicks game at home. Knicks got off to a bad start. They were down 13 early. And I said to myself, if this was the Mets, and this was the Mets fan, and this was game one of a postseason series for the Mets, that place would be tight as a drum. You could probably cut the tension with a knife, but not the Garden. And you could say, well, those are phony fans. You got the, like, you know, you sound like Kelly Oubre Jr. from the Sixers. All those celebrities are there to be seen, and that's all true. Not all of them. Tracy Morgan's a real Knicks fan. I think Ben Stiller's a real Knicks fan. You know, Fat Joe, I think, is a real Knicks fan. I mean, I've heard these guys speak. You know, the Yankees guys there, you know, whether they're Knicks fans or not, who cares? But it was always supportive. Yeah, it gets quiet, but it's not negative. And it's certainly, in that sport, what you would call a sixth man. And I'm like, well, why can't City Field be like that? The Garden's not cheap. The Garden's opulent. The Garden is has a 1% component to it, probably more so than City Field. So I can't figure it out. And, you know, to me, City Field should be an awesome home field advantage. And personally, if 18 to 20,000 are going to show up and be positive and create a good home field advantage, I'll sign up for that. 1,000%. Every day. And, you know, I don't know what the answer is. I don't know. You know, the bigger question is, and maybe if they close out this road trip in a positive manner, take 2 out of 3 from the Giants. I mean, even if they lose the series to the Giants, they play 500 on the West Coast trip. That's positive. But I mean, really, you want to make a statement, take 2 out of 3 from the Giants. Will the fans start to believe? Because right now, the casual fan was told by the media, even as recently as this week, Buster Olney talking about the Mets trading Edwin Diaz and how bad their rotation is. And Pete Alonso, I mean, the national media or the media that the casual fan will follow has already told them the Mets stink, they're a joke, LL Mets, don't waste your time with them, they're the worst team in baseball. Not the White Sox, who have a basically entire lineup of players hitting under 200. Not the Marlins, not the Rockies, those awful teams. The Mets are the joke. That's what the national media tells you. And maybe there's a component of the fan base that believe that. They're a little bit down after a big spending offseason and a disappointing 23 and a sell-off. That right now, we don't know if those sell-offs will yield any fruit with those prospects, but they're promising. And, you know, you look at that and you say, well, is that the problem? Is that why nobody's showing up? Do you want these guys that are so negative the first week of the season to show up? You know, what's the middle ground? And I guess I'm asking the question because normally I come on here with a strong opinion and I lay it out with facts, at least the facts that I see and the way I interpret them. But I don't know. Is it temporary and was it an early season lull? I don't know. The crowds I saw against the Pirates last week in that 3-game sweep, at least the night I was there, reminded me a lot of those pre-Piazza 1998 crowds. Now, that team, in a lot of ways, wasn't as good as this team. The Mets needed Piazza on the 98 team to make that wild card run. This team doesn't, you know, anybody could use a Piazza-type player. This team doesn't necessarily need that to make a wild card run. They need to enhance the roster, probably on the pitching side, to make their run, to get to where they want to get. But I don't think you need a sexy name to invigorate the fan base like you needed in 1998 after it was years since Strawberry left, where they were really building teams that were component-driven. Some nice players like Olerud, who was a lot better than people give him credit for, Bernard Gilkey, Todd Hundley, who was a nice player, you know, Generation K, we know what happened there, Al Leiter, whatever. You know, this team has stars. They have Pete, they have Lindor, they have Nimmo, you know, they have stars. They have, you know, Diaz and everything like that. So I don't know what the apathy about attendance is. The cost that I outlined certainly plays into it. It's extremely expensive. And if you are at any point, like I had talked about why I didn't go last year to a ball game, on the fence about whether you want to invest in the team, you're not going to go. You can't just go to Citi Field. I mean, maybe you could steal some tickets from the secondary market, StubHub or whatever, Vivid Seats, whatever, last minute, but you still got to pay for all the other, you know, public transportation if you want to take the 7 line or the Long Island Railroad. This is all expensive, and it's a full day, so it's killing your day. I mean, even though the games are shorter now, you still got at least an hour each way, unless you live right around the corner from the ballpark. So you're looking at 6 or 7 or 8 hours kicked out of your day, so your day's shot. And you know, if you're going to do that, you want to have a good time. And you want to do it where it doesn't break the bank. So I think Cohen, I understand why Cohen is doing the Speakeasy Club. I understand why they have to get a higher-end clientele. If you're going to sustain a $300-plus million payroll, there's going to be components of what made the Yankees, brought to Citi Field. You know, I see the Metropolitan Park being built across the way. Great job. They're going to have affordable housing. So, you know, maybe they'll create this great community that you could hang out before or after the ball game, and some people might even live there. I mean, this is all maybes. It all sounds good on paper, but it's all going to cost a hell of a lot more money. And if you think parking's going to get cheaper, it's not. If you think tickets are going to get cheaper, they're not. And the thing is, you know, you got to think about, is it part of the soul of what made this team special with fans that grew up watching them? Some have watched them a hell of a lot longer than I started watching them, 87. I know people who have started watching the Mets in 62 or 71 or 67, or, you know, they've seen a lot more baseball than I've seen. They saw a Tom Seaver. They saw the 69 team. They saw the 73 team. They remember John Matlock. They remember Shea Stadium before Davey Johnson's Mets and how mausoleum-esque it is. Talk about Tampa. Shea Stadium was like that. So, you know, those guys were around, and you think, you know, are you pushing those guys out for, you know, fans coming once or twice, you know, touristy type things, if it becomes that kind of venue for exclusive clubs, for corporate settings, all stuff that's necessary in sports in 2024, but is it ripping the soul away of the team, and is it causing some of the problems that we see? I guess we'll see. I guess let's see how this road trip plays out. And let's see how the crowds are as the weather gets warmer. And, you know, maybe there's a couple of bobblehead days or giveaways and whatnot. But I'll tell you what, if 18,000 to 20,000 is what the Mets are going to draw this year because the national media is scared away, or the price is scared away the fans, or for whatever reason the Mets are not cool anymore because there's other things that people want to do, and those are the same 18,000 to 20,000 passionate types that I saw Monday night during the Mets-Pirates game, I'll take those people. I'll go to battle at Citi Field against the competition with that being my 10th man. May not be Madison Square Garden. It may not be the Knick crowd. May not be MSG. And it may not be what you saw at the Garden today when the Rangers were playing or when the Knicks were playing last night. But I'll take it, you know. So just some thoughts here on a Sunday night. I'm not sure if I have all the answers. Maybe you do. Mike Silvat, TalkingMetsPodcast.com, no G, at TalkingMets, no G, on X. And of course, you know, if you're a newsletter subscriber, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG, subscribe. And, you know, even if you're a free subscriber, you can leave comments on various articles. So we'll see. But all right, let's take a quick break. We're going to wrap up with a smorgasbord of ideas. You're listening to the Talking Mets Podcast. We'll be back with more right after this.